At the UPS Store, we understand the importance of a first impression. That's why we're here to help you put your best foot forward and be unstoppable with our printing services. With high-quality paper stock options, banners, business cards, venues, and more, we make sure your small business stands out and your message reaches the masses. After all, we're the one-stop prints that pop store. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, prices, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today and get your print on.
Through the Griffin Tour is back, and this time we are heading to the West Coast. Join Jay and I as we record brand new episodes of the show live in person with you guys, plus a special in-person Jay versus Ben with questions asked by... This September, we will be heading to Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, Berkeley, San Diego, and Los Angeles. Seattle and San Diego were both sold out, but we've just added matinee shows to both locations. So if you missed out on the first pass, or if you want to join us for a doubleheader, we will have two unique shows in the same day. For us, there is nothing more fun than getting to nerd out Harry Potter style with each and every one of you. And we will also have exclusive Through the Gryffindor merch and a VIP meet and greet available for every show. We hope to see you all there. Ticket links can be found in the show notes or at supercarlinbrothers.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the mysteries behind Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 14, Snape's Grudge.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we got to kick off. I mean, I can't think about anything else other than this chapter arc.
Which
I feel like you teased last week and you were like, kind of fantastic chapter art inbound.
It's pretty good. It is like the first real depiction I think you get of Snape. He is so much more evil looking than I like ever picture him to be.
Yeah, he looks sinister. Like it's almost like I think of Jafar.
He kind of has a Jafarism to him.
Yeah, from Aladdin.
Or in Name of the Wind, he always talks about Elk Sadal looking like a dark wizard from one of those plays. And I'm like, this is what I think Elk Sadal looks like.
100%. Yes. Not to jump fandoms or anything on you guys. But no, I agree. So this is a very interesting depiction of an evil kind of looking wizardy man. It's really not how I picture Snape. He's got a beard,
which is never mentioned having. Yeah, that's the weird thing. I think I can still remember how I pictured Snape before the movies came out.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't want to throw you under the bus in the wake of the entire broomstick stirrup debate that is raging in the comment section. However, is it possibly the case that you have not always approved of the Alan Rickman Severus Snape?
I mean, he does a fantastic job.
He does do a fantastic job.
It was just not how I pictured Snape, and I also... I think this is true of all the Marauders. I think they should all just be a lot younger.
That is one of those things where it's always difficult to sort of fully wrap your head around because the time frames as you learn more about them and the fact that James and Lily were 20. I can never remember if it's 20 or 21, but somewhere in that time range. Yeah. You always think that they are these battle tested wizened
right.
members of this army against evil and they've just got years of battlefield experience and stuff.
I always imagined them as in their mid-30s, but they're not.
Right. Yeah. But then when I imagine myself as a 21-year-old, I'm I don't know that there was that much that you could have said that would have put me in the same praise column as the way people revere James and Lily.
True.
And so in that vein, I think that by the time Harry rolls around, we should have a Severus Snape who is approximately in his 30s.
Yeah, he should be about our age now. He should look our level of youth.
So yeah, when they're casting in the future, maybe consider us.
You know, if you're looking for someone to play Snape with a bad British accent, give us a call. You know, or any of the Marauders.
Yeah.
You know, You know what? I'd be James with like zero speaking lines. You know,
you could throw me in on a bench in the background of a scene, and I'll just sit there like reading a book.
Exactly.
You know, or stirring a cup with like my wandless magic with a spoon. Yeah. I'll be that guy.
Be that guy.
Anyway, so yeah, no, this depiction of Snape is not how I pictured Snape. I don't know that I've ever had major qualms with other than the age thing with the rest of the Marauders or people from this era. So yeah, I don't know. But even having seen this like on my first pass of the books, I don't think it influenced my vision of the character.
I know,
at
like
all.
Weirdly, like I know he's always described as having like the long black greasy hair, but like when I was a kid, I kind of imagined him like bald.
Like, interesting. Weirdly,
I imagine him with like kind of almost like a vulture kind of neck and like a very big hook nose, and then like hair almost like this but without the beard, like just sort of some hair off the back but kind of like bald.
Kind of like
it's
bald.
Very balding. Different. Like kind of sneering down his nose, but kind of very vulture-like, I think is how I used to picture him.
Do you think that maybe in your mind he was trying to take after, you know, the big baldy himself, Mr. Voldemort?
Maybe.
Mr. Mort. His first name's Voldemort, last name Mort.
That sounds like a great TikTok where like Voldemort's getting like a UPS delivery.
Yes.
Is it got a Mr. Mort? Voldemort. No, Muggle.
Even better would be like more.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not supposed to pronounce the T.
Right.
I think. Yeah. I think Jim Dale doesn't pronounce the T for like the first four books.
Because like it goes back and forth.
And then eventually he starts to pronounce it in the end. Anyway, we're way off topic. We haven't even read one line of chapter 14, Snape's Grudge. Anyway, so yes, I think it's a good illustration. It does not depict Snape to me.
Yeah.
That's where I leave it.
There you go. We also get to see the map though, which looks way more like the map as I imagine it.
Yeah, that's another one where the map, and it kind of makes sense the way that they prop designed it, because there are like Hogwarts is so big,
yeah,
and there are so many levels that you almost need like all the flappy bits.
Yeah.
However, the descriptions of Harry carrying kind of like this bare piece of parchment, it's kind of like it would be surprising if anybody picked up the prop that was created and didn't find themselves thinking like, well, this is certainly more than just a piece
right.
of parchment.
Like if you picked up that spare piece of parchment, it'd be like, oh, really?
Yeah,
really, it's like this?
Yeah.
Because it's got like 1,000 flaps and windows and stuff.
It's got more flaps than Arthur Weasley's wallet.
What?
Oh, that's like, you know how like they used to carry like all the photos in the wallet?
Yeah.
People would like open up their wallet and all the school photos would drop out.
Like, how are the kids doing? Let me show you.
Here they are. Here's all their latest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Nice. So yeah, but we'll get to the map and Harry's abhorrent use of it in this chapter.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Harry. It really feels like a lot of his problems were avoidable, given objects he was holding in his hands.
You know what I'm excited about for this chapter is that it has some of the best fodder for one of the least important, but otherwise one of my favorite theories.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
We'll get to it. Anyway, let's dive on in. You lead off.
Let's do it. So we start off as a recap from the last chapter. Sirius Black has broken into Gryffindor Tower and attacked Ron and then scampered. Let's see, what are we starting with here? We're learning new, they're putting new security all over the castle. The one that stands out to me immediately, it says Professor Flitwick could be seen teaching the front doors to recognize a large picture of Sirius Black. And I'm like, why didn't you do that to start? Like, you didn't do that?
Right.
Don't
right.
you have pictures in the castle with eyes? Like, don't the portraits see the dog running around?
Yeah.
You know, it seems like they're all just like, well, nah, that wasn't anything to report.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's like you've got like actual portraits that are able to deliver information lining the walls all the way through the castle, and yet here we are teaching the front doors.
Yeah,
this particular
I know.
Skill. Yeah,
and then it's like point. Sir Cadogan had been fired. I'm like, yeah, you think? Like, dude, you were put here because Sirius Black attacked the last painting, and your main job is to not let Sirius Black in. And like, he clearly transformed into a human to give you the password because otherwise he can't say them.
Right.
And it's like, you're teaching the front doors what Sirius Black looked like? You didn't tell Sir Cadogan, the man guarding against Sirius Black, what Sirius Black looked like?
Right, right, right.
Like, yeah. Sir Cadogan.
It seems like the Hogwarts castle is ill-equipped for security as much as it is regarded as like the safest place to be.
Yeah.
Like they don't have necessarily the best protocols.
They don't have the best protocols. I mean, especially because it's like it sounds like Sirius could have just bypassed Sir Cadogan altogether and just like flu powdered his way in, you know?
Oh,
like I would love to say, nah, they shut down the flu powder in the castle during this time, but in this chapter
they use it.
They use it. Yep, so they have it. So and like that's just what Sirius does next year to talk to Harry and Goblin. It's like, boy, guys, gaping security holes.
Yeah.
Gaping.
Yeah. The other thing that they do in the name of security though is they hire a bunch of surly security trolls to guard the portrait of the fat lady. I go back to the, I mean, and maybe it's the difference between like a mountain troll that like entered the castle via Quirrell Demort in year one. I have a hard time imagining these trolls like not being a liability, like kind of unto themselves.
It feels like it all lines up with the Dementors. And it's like, cause yeah, you're right. For Harry, Ron, and Hermione, a troll was a former enemy, but now you've sort of aligned yourself with the enemy in the name of stopping Sirius Black.
Right.
Which is like the same as the Dementors. And it's like they're seen as these good guys because that's how bad Sirius Black is. Like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right, right. You know? Where do you suppose, do you think this is, we have a Dementor guards situation going on, or not Dementor, Azkaban guards situation going on where Aurors just haven't been invented yet? Like where's like Kingsley?
Oh, I know. You know. Like where, because I think a little bit, because I think earlier when we were talking to Fudge, he's like, only trained hit wizards from the magical reinforcement security squad could have taken Black. You know, it's just like, Aurors? Don't you work at the ministry, bro?
You have a shorter word for that.
Yeah.
Save yourself the mouthful.
I know.
That's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. So anyway, there's that. Yeah,
it does seem like otherwise, it's curious because it's either like, this is a big threat, but it's not such a big threat as to reflect that of what we will do in Order of the Phoenix when like it's Voldemort proper.
Yeah.
You know, out there. It's like, you know, we're not breaking out the Aurors to go and spend time at high school all day.
I know. Well, I guess they feel like the Dementors are just like, it's the same reason they use the Dementors to guard the prison instead of Aurors. They're just like, this is better.
Sure. I guess that's true. That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
So then Harry goes on noticing all the security, but couldn't help but notice that the statue of the One-Eyed Witch on the third floor remained unguarded and unblocked. And it's like he's noticing it, and it's just like he could do something about it. And it honestly feels like a little irresponsible because Harry's like, what's more important to me? Like me being murdered or being able to go to Hogsmeade? Hogsmeade.
I know. And it really is kind of interesting because like Lupin, jumping ahead like towards the very end of the chapter real quick, because there's a line about like Lupin basically discussing, you know, Harry's usage of the map, and Lupin does hit him with the line, your parents gave their lives to keep you alive, a poor way to repay them, gambling their sacrifice for a bag of magic tricks. And it's like when Lupin says that, it's like, that's true.
I know.
It's like Lupin really gotcha.
I know. I think he even says Harry's like he felt worse after that than anything Snape had said. And it was like, yeah, because this whole chapter, you guys are being like extremely flippant in the wake of Ron almost apparently getting murdered.
I know. And it's weird too, because like the way the chapter is written, you have another one of these moments later on, like where Hermione is sort of like threatening to like turn them in about the map. And it's like, the way the text reads is clearly still like in like a very Harry-centric perspective, where it still seems like she's coming across a little bit as like overly cautious or like kind of irritating with like stop taking all the fun away, Hermione. But it's like, no, Hermione is completely right.
Oh, I know. Like, it's like they treat Hermione like she's being so unreasonable, and like this is like a bad chapter for Harry and Ron.
It's in not particular. Their best. Yeah, I agree.
It is like they are in this weird zone where like Ron has almost been murdered, but like Harry's letting his desire to go to Honeydukes, and Ron is letting his anger about Scabbers like
outweigh the fact that he was almost murdered.
Yeah.
Like, it, like, especially because it is happening in the wake of that. Like, you forget it because nothing happened. But, like, as far as Ron is concerned, the escaped convict, Sirius Black, was in his room holding a knife. And, like, they think he was there to get Harry.
Right.
You know? And he's still like, nah, come to Honeydukes. It's fine.
Right.
Like,
right.
Do it. And Hermione's like, seriously, don't do that. Like, Ron, you almost just died. I'm so afraid. Like, you know.
I know. It reminds me back to year one where Hermione makes the comment where she's like, you're going to end up dead or worse, expelled.
Yeah.
And there's like the famous, like, you know, she needs to sort out her priorities.
Yes.
It's like in this case, it's like, you're going to end up dead or worse, not being able to go to a candy shop.
It's exactly what it is. It's like, I'm trying to like rake my brain for like why Harry is being this way. And I'm like, is it the sense of like, he was so trapped at the Dursleys for so long. And this is like, freedom that he's being denied or something.
I mean,
you know, like, it's like, I could tell them about the one-eyed witch, but I don't know for sure that's how he's getting in. And if I tell them, then I'll never be able to use it again. And if they catch him without me telling them, then it'll still be open.
Well, there could be a little bit of like, you know, like I always regard, you know, Harry in Order of the Phoenix to be like your classic sort of like misunderstood, like teenager, you know, experience.
Yeah.
Like I feel like there, like I remember an era of my own life where I felt like I was, you know, book five Harry. And so like, I don't know if like maybe like, because inside of a story similar to like what we're watching unfold, you have to watch kids be more mature beyond their years so often that you almost need to like kind of keep in mind the fact that they are 13,
right,
and like they have bad and flawed logic.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's like, this is, you know, like the small example I could give from being the same age as, I remember there was a day at school where it snowed and we were let out early. And so a buddy of mine, like, we were like, hey, since we got out early, why don't we walk 4 miles home from school today instead of taking the bus?
Right.
And so like, I was in band. So I had like this big, you know, like instrument with me.
You had to carry it.
Had to carry, you know, he was carrying a trumpet and his backpack and everything. And so like, we just walked, you know, 4 miles home, and mom was livid, you know, because of course, you know, it's like, it's snowing. So there's like the roads are a little bit more dangerous. They're letting us out early for a specific reason. It's terrible logic.
Right.
And anyway, so it's a detour from the book, obviously, but like maybe there's a little bit of that going on here where it's like, they're like, truly their priorities are in the wrong place.
I mean, they're absolutely in the wrong place. And it's like, I think it would be understandable. Like, I could even, like, be, like, I could even side with them had Sirius Black not entered Gryffindor Tower twice.
I know,
so far.
I know. Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
just, like, whatever security you think they're putting up, he's getting by it, dude.
Right.
Like, I don't know why you feel safe. He has gotten into your room.
Yes, you know? Yes, like, yes. Stood over you.
Like, it's just, they're, this is just going to be the theme of this chapter, so I don't feel like we should harp on it for too long because it's going to keep coming up.
I know, that's a good point. It's a good point.
But yeah, and then like Ron saying, like, we know he's not coming in through Honeydukes, and it's like, you don't know that.
Yeah, we'd have heard if the shop had been broken into. It's like no, you would have heard like the next day.
Yeah.
Not like, hey, Honeydukes was broken into right now.
Yeah.
Like actively in the current.
Right. Exactly. And it's like, Ron, like, Sirius Black isn't going to like break in and make a giant mess if he wants to keep using it, you know?
Right. Right. Well, so on this exact token, let's scooch forward just a little bit, because there is another interesting thing that's going on that could be influencing this behavior as well, which is the very next line that says Ron had become an instant celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of one of those moments where it's like Ron is gaining a lot of like notoriety that he's maybe coveted for a little while, kind of like always living in the wake of, you know, the chosen one, the Harry Potter.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the next line is, for the first time in his life, people were paying more attention to him than to Harry, and it was clear that Ron was rather enjoying the experience. Like, boy, that's like almost the whole premise for what if Ron was in Hufflepuff.
I know. I literally wrote that. Like, I have a line here that says, hey, we made this happen in Ron and Hufflepuff, which is the What If series we're doing on our YouTube channel right now. But I think that could be one of those things where like Ron in particular is so determined to take all of the good from the situation without reflecting on any of the bad. So it's like, hey, I'm kind of popular now. Like, of course I want to go do like the fun social hangout thing on the weekend because, right. you know, because like then not only do I get to go and hang out with everybody like outside of school premises, but like, look, I'm this like, you know, hot new thing.
Yeah. I'm like hotshot. It's like immediately the price of fame
yes.
presents itself. And it's like, yeah, you're famous, but that means you have to not do this anymore. And
exactly.
It's like, Ron's like, no, but Harry, come to Huntington because like attention me. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think that could definitely be playing a right. pretty big role in where Ron's, you know, his mental state is at. Like, it's almost like he completely forgot about the fact that he was almost potentially murdered and is now just kind of basking in the glory of the fun
yeah.
on the other end of it. Yeah. So, but I do love the description that he was telling anyone who was asked what had happened with a wealth of detail. He goes through it. And I like that he says he's holding this great long knife. Must have been 12 inches, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and then I yelled, and he scampered. And it's like, is he attempting to tell a story in a way that was sort of like, I yelled, and he ran away?
I know. I'm like, are you saying like you scared him off? Because yeah, right. like as I was reading this, I was like, Ron's not much of a storyteller yet, you know?
Yeah, he's not
like, right. I literally highlighted, and he scampered, and I was like, it's not much of a flourish.
Ron, yeah, yeah, know? Yeah. It sort of ended.
I yelled, and he scampered. Which also, this is one of those like, in the British versions, the word is scarpered.
Is it really?
Yes.
Scarper off.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Okay. I felt like I've heard that phrase before.
Yeah.
Okay. So that tracks. Like that. I didn't know that though.
Me neither.
No, that's
I've always been like scampered such like a wimpy way to end this story.
I know. Hilariously though, you could ask anybody in our office. It is not uncommon that like if I have to like leave early, it's like, all right guys, I got a scamper.
Oh.
It is a word I use often. That is a word.
You're a scamperer.
I'm a scamperer.
You scamp.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Okay.
This does bring up the question though, between Ron and Harry, which is like, why did he run?
Yes. Good instincts.
Good instincts, because it really is a great question, because like in this particular situation, Sirius is in a room with his presumed target. Most of them are unconscious. Like, he has successfully made it as far as he needed to make it to cause the damage.
Right.
And I think that like they start theorizing a little bit, like basically he must have known that it was going to be like, you know, if he attacked one of us, that it would have been really difficult because it would have made so much noise for him to then safely exit the castle.
Right.
So basically they're like, oh, like we woke up and that's why he left.
Right.
You know, because then we were making noise and the noise is going to alert everybody else. And then, you know, I think they bring up the point like then he would have met the teachers, you know, which is actually sort of like a good bit of, I don't think we can quite call it foreshadowing from like a literary standpoint or anything, but you do have that line way fast forward where like, you know, McGonagall is like, us teachers are pretty formidable.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and it's true.
Yeah, they sure are. Yeah. McGonagall versus Snape.
Boom.
Boom.
They can teach doors how to recognize people.
I know, right?
Of course they can't teach.
Can't teach portraits.
Who can talk, but whatever.
He had the password.
Yeah. Then we kind of get like a little bit of the wake of the hardship that Neville is going through, which really, I mean, this is tough for Neville because it's really not his, like, Neville is already known as sort of this like punching bag. They're like, it's never actually said, I don't think, in the books, but there's that like that line from the movies in Lockhart's class where it's like, why is it always me? And it's like, this reflects that sentiment so tremendously. It's like Neville was in total disgrace. Professor McGonagall was so furious with him. She had banned him from all future Hogsmeade visits, given him a detention, and forbidden anyone to give him the password into the tower.
Which Harry does.
He's forced to wait outside the common room every night for somebody to let him in. Like, you know, while the security trolls are just leering at him. It's like, it seems just so awful. And then to make matters worse, Neville's grandmother, sends in the big guns.
The howler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which does seem like it would be, honestly, it's hilarious because it's a very like thorough kind of punishment for a parental figure to deliver to a high school student.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be so embarrassing.
It would be very embarrassing.
Yeah.
It would be very embarrassing. So sure enough though, the next day the howler runs in, and you know, Ron, having gotten one of these himself, is just sort of like, run for it, man.
Run for it. And he tries to, and then it feels like before the Slytherins even know what's about to happen, they're just watching him, they're laughing at him running, and I'm like, they really have nothing better to do over there.
I know, yeah. It's like the Slytherin's like, yeah, they got tons of ambition, but they use most of it just watching the Gryffindors.
I know, they're just like, oh boy, I hope, do you think something's going to happen today? I hope, oh, like, Longbottom's running. Yeah, what's he got? Is that a red envelope?
Let's howl with laughter.
Yeah, hilarious, guys. let's see. I also just made quick note that, like, you know, Neville did have to abandon his breakfast of cornflakes.
I know. Yeah, cornflakes. That's like one of those things. Like, I have no idea. We have a brand in America of cereal called cornflakes.
Right.
But maybe that's like one of those situations where it's like cornflakes, they named it just what it is. And,
right. And it's like, so, but there are like cornflakes in other cereals.
There are. Yeah. But it is like one of those moments. It actually is like one of the things I don't like about the Percy Jackson books a little bit, which the frequency at which they just like mention like Doritos or like a Dr. Pepper can or something. It's like,
right.
It's like being someone who just grew up with those items and it being like America centric. It's like they don't have the additional, like, there is no whimsy to those things. They just kind of come across to me as like, I'm like, oh.
Okay. Yeah, it like takes me out of the magic.
Exactly.
When they do that.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So I have a little bit of that moment with when they say cornflakes. I'm like, cornflakes?
I know.
At Hogwarts?
Cornflakes? Like, Neville, come on. You're at wizard school. Why are you eating cornflakes? That's like so boring.
Eat a baked potato like everyone else.
I know, right? Yeah. For breakfast.
There is a line, though, that comes out of the Howler that we get where it says that Neville's grandmother's voice magically magnified 100 times as usual, shrieking about how he had brought shame on the whole family, which I did highlight and just put a note in there that was just basically like, this is just, you know, Gran, this is not what Neville needs. Like,
yeah.
You know, because it's hard to imagine Frank and Alice Longbottom having this line of phrasing, you know, I can't imagine that this is what they would have said, and it's what Neville struggles with.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can see why, like, you know, when Neville is sort of like living under the weight of this pressure of like who his parents were and consistently not living up to the expectations they had laid out for him as to what he should be doing. It's like, it makes it all the sweeter, I guess, eventually, like when Neville like rises above that and proves like that he has, like, you know, he's formidable himself. He just
needs some confidence,
but nobody seems to be, you know, helping him, you know.
Right. It's like, and like anytime he messes up, they make it worse.
They do. Yeah. So anyway, so continue on from there, where Hedwig has arrived on the scene, also with a letter from Hagrid, which is inviting Harry and Ron down for a cup of tea this afternoon. He's going to meet them at the entrance hall and specifies that, you know, wait for me because you are not allowed out on your own. Cheers, Hagrid.
I know, writes it in all caps.
Yeah, it's really good. I like the scrawl. The book copies that we have good Hagrid scrawl, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's see. And then Ron assumes that Hagrid wants to hear all about Sirius Black. And then when they get down there, much to Ron's dismay, Hagrid's already heard all about it. Let's see. He's got, I think, which makes Ron feel a little put out. I think it's funny that Hagrid's got Buckbeak in the cabin with him, because, like, where are all the other hippogriffs?
I know.
Because he had, like, so many.
Yeah.
Like, where are they?
or is his other most favorite Thestral, Tenebris, also just invisibly hanging out inside
probably.
Of the cabin?
Yeah, right? Yeah, there. But no, Buckbeak's just in the cabin, right there. Got a plate of dead ferrets.
I know. I heard that. That's just like, ooh, yum.
Yeah. And he's telling them that they've got his case against the Committee for Disposal of Dangerous Creatures coming up. says, I love this. This Friday, me and him are going down to London. I booked 2 beds on the night bus. I'm like, you to bring the hippogriff on the night bus.
I know. I was like, imagine the look on Stan Shunbuck's face. He's like, what's your hippogriff for?
And then he's like, booked beds for them. He's a little like, all right, here, Beaky, let me tuck you in.
Right.
On like a human bed.
Right.
This is like a giant animal.
Yes.
I'm imagining getting on a bus and being like, all right, and if we can all make room for my horse, you know, like just that's what's happening.
It is what's happening. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, hopefully the night bus is seen stranger than a hippogriff, but
it's
hard to say. We do have the theory that the night bus is a transfigured Zowu, which is like the lion-ish type creature that is capable of like jumping between space and time.
Yes.
Which would mean that you then have a hippogriff residing inside of a Zowu.
Would be kind of like that. And yeah. Then I just think, I mean, Hagrid, let's think it through. You're on your way to a case about how dangerous this creature is, and you're going to put your giant horse eagle in a small spot with other people on a chaotic bus get to London when Buckbeak himself can fly.
Yeah.
It's not well thought out.
All that. Oh, no. Yeah. No, it's not that well thought out. You're right. It's, and the funny thing, too, is that it's almost like it's like ministry. The request for Buckbeak to be present for this trial is causing way more risk.
Way.
You know, like yeah. It doesn't seem like that's typically what
come to him.
Happen. Yeah. Right. Huh. It's like, if anything, I feel like it's proving Hagrid's point when he can successfully transport Buckbeak through public transportation all the way to London and back without any incidents whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is clearly a well-trained hippogriff.
Right.
Yeah.
Very well-trained indeed.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Shopify. Boy, howdy, where to begin? I remember graduating college and having aspirations of becoming an entrepreneur. I was brimming with ideas. A kitchen tool that made spiral cut hot dogs, or a phone case that uses a special retractable cables to wrap around any surface for selfies. I had no idea how to make these ideas a reality, and spoilers, I still don't. However, what I have learned through my various other endeavors is how to take products and make them available for purchases online, thanks to Shopify. Shopify is an e-commerce platform that makes designing your webpage, setting up your store, and making your first sales a breeze. But the best part is that after that first sale, Shopify scales with your growth, meaning it's perfect whether you're selling tens, hundreds, or even thousands of products monthly. And I am a data person, and boy does Shopify have data. Want to know how many hot dog spiralizers you sold between May 29th and July 5th? That's peak hot dog season. Boom, data in no time. Also, the answer is zero. I still don't know how to make a hot dog spiralizer, but if I did, I would know exactly how to sell them. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout that we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/griffin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/griffin to upgrade your selling today. Go to shopify.com/griffin to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/griffin.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Then they said they'd forgotten their promise about helping him to prepare Buckbeak's defense, but like, weren't they looking up a bunch of stuff?
Over like the
like
the
Christmas, yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
I think that they were in fact doing that. So that's a good point. But maybe it's just been more time has passed and it's kind of like they've since given up on this particular thing.
Yeah.
The point is though is that the person who hasn't forgotten about it is Hermione, and this is kind of like a sweet moment though for Hagrid because like he basically I think is in a way that maybe he doesn't. Always, I do feel like he's putting on like a little bit of like a like an adult mentor type cap here.
Yeah.
Like he has invited them both down. I feel like he's being quite cordial with them, but he does have a specific reason why they were asked to be there. And he basically says exactly that. I've got something to discuss with you two. And they're like, what is it? And it's like, it's Hermione. And it's, you know, I love that Hagrid is also looking out for her. Like
yeah.
that's really sweet. And it's sad that she's been like coming down to, you know, to visit so much. Like you can only imagine like, not that Hermione is like, oh, I'm so lonely, I'm visiting Hagrid, but like, you know, it sort of does give you that like feeling of like, if this is a student who doesn't have anybody else to hang out with other than like one of the teachers, it's like, man, that is very isolating.
Yeah.
That like, you know, that she has to go and find like an adult to spend time with rather than any of her classmates.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems so out of character for Harry and Ron, or like maybe not Ron as much, but like Harry for sure.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah. And then what's crazy to me is that like Hagrid breaks this down for them with like extremely good, reasonable points.
Yes.
As like someone who's good with beasts. He's like, you're mad at her because her cat acted like a cat.
Yes. You know,
and it's just like, and then let's see. Then she still found the time to help him. Is Ragged Hill stand a good chance now? Nope. But then he kind of says what you said earlier, like Lupin later on is like, you know, everyone's trying to protect you and you're willing to risk it all for a bag of magic tricks.
Right.
And Hagrid basically says the same thing. He's like, gotta tell you, I thought you'd value your friendship more than broomsticks and rats. You know, it's just like, yeah.
I know. I highlighted the same thing and I was just like, in all caps, like, fair point.
I know.
You know, like, because it is so true. And at the heart of this story, like, part of what makes the whole saga so amazing is the friendship between these three people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, their love and camaraderie with each other is like part of what makes it so like special. So yeah, you're right. Like, this is just sort of like a low chapter for Harry and Ron. They're not doing their best. And to be honest, even as the chapter unfolds, I don't even think that they take Hagrid's words as seriously as they should.
Oh, I know. Like, I mean, Hagrid is basically just like telling them, like, you guys, you're like over the line. Like, she is absolutely looking out for your best interest. She was super afraid when you got attacked, Ron.
Right.
Like, you know, the cat's just acting like a cat. And Ron's like, just digging in. He is doubling down. He's like, if she'd just get rid of that cat, I'd speak to her again. And it's just like, dude, like, come on. It is not. You are really it's just. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. And I mean, even Hagrid, I feel like, you know, like, this is where he's just like, he comes back, you know, he's like, but she's still sticking up for it. It's a maniac. She won't hear a word against it. And Hagrid, I think, just sort of relates and it's like, ah, well, people can be a bit stupid about their pets.
Yeah. Hagrid, on the other hand, having a very good chapter, minus his logic about getting Buckbeak to the ministry.
Minus that. Yeah.
Yeah. Minus that.
He just wants Buckbeak to
be comfortable. A lot of wisdom he's doling out here that they are just patently ignoring.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Indeed. Indeed. And so, yeah, just despite all of this, the sage wisdom that Hagrid has just dumped upon them, they get back to the Gryffindor common room where there's a bunch of people hanging out around the bulletin board because there's a new Hogsmeade weekend announced.
Woo!
And it's, part of me is like, staff,
also
is,
that
is now the time,
right?
Like, are we just serious? The whole thing
last weekend, you know, that not only did he break into the castle, but is clearly in the area.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, it seems like one of those things where it's like, I'm like, guys, I think maybe give it a beat.
Maybe you give it a beat.
Get any information whatsoever. There's a sighting in London. Okay, now we're maybe a little bit better off.
Maybe.
But, there's also teleportation in this world, so maybe not. Anyway, so while they're talking about it, Ron, of course, is kind of like exchanging glances with Harry, and he's sort of like, hey, what do you think? You know, they haven't done anything about the secret passageway into Honeydukes.
Yeah. Ron's just so reckless in this chapter.
I know. And then, of course, Hermione is standing by and, you know, it like is basically just like, Harry, if you go to Hogsmeade again, I'll tell Professor McGonagall about the map. And it's like, I highlighted that. I was just like, she's just having a tough year for having to do the right thing. You know, it's like,
oh my gosh. Yes, she really is. Like, I love her argument here. It says, Ron, how can you let him go with you after what Sirius Black nearly did to you? Like, I mean it. I'll tell. And Ron says, so now you're trying to get Harry expelled? And it's like, Ron, the gaslighting is so annoying.
Yes, I know. Yeah, it's like, don't do this.
Like, no, Ron, you're trying to get Harry expelled.
Yes, exactly. No, you're right. Yeah. It's like, you're insisting Harry break rules and go put himself in danger. It's like, expulsion, especially given the information y'all currently know, is the least of your troubles. Like, this, right. this is the death thing. But it does, it reminds me, like, Hermione is summoning a lot of, like, her sort of, like, Gryffindor traits, you know, because this does hail back a lot to Neville trying to stop them from
going
down to go through the trap door in year one, because it's like that. It is that, like, you know, it's a difficult thing to stand up to your enemies, but even more difficult to stand up to your friends, which is such, it's so true.
Yeah.
You know, and Hermione just keeps being forced to have to do it. So it's very difficult. So I basically was just like, I'm with Hermione on this one.
I know. And it's like, it's hard to believe Harry, like, doesn't hedge at all on this. Like, I can see why, like, Ron is still mad. Like, I mean, I think his rationale is stupid, but, like, he's at least got the Scabbers point to go on.
Right.
Like, and it's like, but for Harry, I'm surprised he's not like, well, maybe she's got a point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But obviously he does go into Hogsmeade. So.
And he does say, yeah, that I'm bringing my invisibility cloak with me this time.
Don't know why he didn't last time. That was so stupid.
It was.
Like,
it was
because indeed. Like last time, like this time, Draco is barely going to see him. And it's immediately like, oh my gosh, Harry's expelled. Last time he's just walking around and literally everyone sees him.
I know. Yeah. People are just like, Harry, what up, my boy?
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably.
You have to imagine. He's pretty famous.
Famous guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So then basically, you know, they have this like little ruse where they sort of like fake going back up the marble staircase so that like it looks like he's just sort of like, oh, you know, bye, Ron. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
You know, to throw Hermione off of the scent. They go down to the One-Eyed Witch statue where they had the like his bag into the statue, and then Neville comes around the corner.
Now, this is so, even this is infuriating to me.
What do you got?
Because like Harry is like trying to get in there. He's looking at the map. He's like, okay, Neville's coming. Descendium. Ah, man, Neville's here.
That's true.
Like
that's
Harry. You saw him coming.
I know. Yeah, like just be like, put him on his way.
I know.
No,
like,
big deal.
Put on the cloak already. You know, he's not gonna know. Just go wait for Neville to pass.
That's true. You are literally holding the ability to become invisible.
Right.
In this exact moment.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, Harry's sitting there thinking, if only there was some way for Neville to not see me right now.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Nothing I can do about it.
I better come up with some really bad excuses.
Really bad excuses, and just sort of like lie to Neville a lot and. Yeah, shake him off.
I know, yeah. And that's another one, too, because, like, Neville in this particular situation is dealing with the fact that despite the fact that he should have been able to go to Hogsmeade, isn't able to because he's been punished, he's trying to find an activity to spend what otherwise is probably going to feel like a rather miserable day feeling left out. And Harry's just like, nah.
Yeah. He's like, actually, I'd rather go risk my life than hang out with you, Neville. Yeah, so let me lie a bunch. Yeah, you're right. It's like Neville's already down. And it's like this would be such a good opportunity for Harry to just like, you know, offer some friendship to Neville.
Yes.
Like, oh, like, because that's the thing. It's like, now you're not even alone, Harry. Like, one of your friends is there.
Yeah, one of
like,
your own classmates. Yeah. And you're here and everything.
Yeah, and he finds you and he's like, want to play a game? He's like, no.
Absolutely
I'd rather die, literally.
I'd rather die. It is the theme of this chapter.
It is.
Yeah. But so this is the little tidbit that I think is one of my favorites about one of my unimportant theories. But the way that he tries to kind of deter Neville is he's like, no, I don't want to play Exploding Snap right now. I was going to go to the library to do that vampire essay for Lupin.
You think they bucked at that? Like, vampires? I don't know if we're ready for that.
Well, honestly, Jay, they may have. Because this is, I have this theory that, like, within the wizarding world, we know that vampires do, in fact, exist. Yeah. And vampires famously associated with bats. And Severus Snape, oftentimes referred to as being awfully bat-like in nature.
You think he's returning the favor?
I think what we are seeing is the old childhood rivalry between Lupin and Snape play out inside of this chapter. I mean,
absolutely.
This is the chapter where the Marauders are going to insult Snape basically to his face via their map. And we know that the trick that Snape was basically playing when he came to step in as Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher was assigning an essay on werewolves, and now Lupin has come back and he's assigned an essay on vampires.
Which does seem ahead of the curve, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does. I mean, they're only learning about hinky punks and red caps.
I know. Think they're ready for vampires? My goodness.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, turn it to page 294. but no, so I do, that's like a little one where I'm like, is this, even if it's Lupin sort of like playfully being like, fine, you're going to tell everybody I'm a werewolf, I'm going to convince them you're a vampire.
Right.
Like, even if it's not hard evidence that Snape is a vampire, I feel like it's still a joke that Lupin is playing on Snape through assignments.
Right. Yes. He's just like, I know what everyone says about you, so.
I'm returning the volley. Yeah.
And it's like such a Lupin way to do it. Just like, I'm just teaching a class, Severus.
Of course. So. It can't be anything more than that.
Yes. This looks like a bit of parchment enchanted to insult anyone who reads it. Nonetheless.
Yeah. Yep. So
Harry and Neville randomly run it. Like, Neville, who has no reason to even be on this corridor, just runs into Harry. And then Snape, who also seems to have no reason to be on this corridor, finds them.
I know. And so when Snape walks up, he goes, he says, and what are you two doing here? An odd place to meet. And it's kind of interesting that he says this, because it's sort of like, if Snape knows about the secret passage through the One-Eyed Witch, like, that might be the reason. It's like, an odd place for you to be on a day that you're not supposed to be in Hogsmeade, standing in front of a secret passage to Hogsmeade.
Yeah.
But
like, he doesn't know about it.
He doesn't know about it. And it's interesting, though, because as it says, Harry and Neville set off without another word. As they turned the corner, Harry looked back. Snape was running one of his hands over the One-Eyed Witch's head, examining it closely. And so it's like, the fact that he identifies, this is an odd place to meet, and then they leave, and then Snape is like, is sort of like zeroed in on exactly why Harry was there. Like, 100%, if nothing else, if he doesn't know about the secret passageway, he just used legitimacy on Harry.
Oh, you think so? Yeah.
He had to. Would he be examining the witch?
Oh, and it's kind of surprising he doesn't get the passageway to reveal itself, because, like, later when he gets the map, he does all these things and he's like, reveal me all secrets, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it kind of works.
Right.
You know, like, it's a weird way. Like, you don't see people do magic that way, just sort of commanding stuff. But it feels like whatever the spell concealing the passageway, like, it's just like, it's basically just a know the password kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, it feels like Snape's, you know, reasoning with the map would have worked on the statue.
Right. Just try the same thing.
Just try the same things. Like, and he's actively inspecting it. So I'm surprised he doesn't discover it.
I know. Yeah. It does seem a little bit odd, but 100%. I mean, the fact that he dials in on the statue makes me think that he's just read Harry's mind, which I also think comes up later.
Absolutely.
Well.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. Later it does. Yeah.
So anyway, then let's see here. Where do we go from there?
Harry tells Neville the password, which he's not supposed to do.
Yes, indeed. Yep.
Harry's checking the map, finds Snape back in his office, gets down into the chute and, you know, makes the, I don't know, 50-minute walk to Hogsmeade.
Just the tremendously long passageway.
Yeah.
Which again is like one of those things, like going back to like our high school days, we used to like crawl through tunnels sometimes very unwisdomly.
Yeah.
However, it's like, if I was going 50 minutes, I'd be like, this is too far.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be like,
this is a long tunnel.
Like, we shouldn't be traveling this far through this tunnel.
I think we probably spent at least 50 minutes in a tunnel before.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, that's a good point. We shouldn't have done it, though.
Well, no.
Point is, we did,
and man.
We were similarly aged.
What is interesting to me is that Harry and Ron are only willing to use this passage on Hogsmeade weekends when everyone else will be there, you know?
True.
It's like, why don't you guys just go when no one will be there?
You know, Hogsmeade doesn't totally make sense, because it does definitely feel like the businesses there would benefit from being close to the school. And it's like, it's almost like they have like, you know, 6 weekends a year as they're like Black Fridays.
Right.
You know, it's like, we got to do all our business, 'cause like the kids are here.
Yeah.
What are they doing the rest of the time?
I don't know. I mean, I guess people live there.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, you know, how
much candy are adult wizards buying?
I know. Right. Know?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, that is okay. I suppose it is possible that because you can just like magically, like, you know, fix your teeth and stuff, that like you don't need to concern yourself nearly as much with like sugar.
So you just eat.
You like can just like you can just eat as much candy as you want. Maybe that's why Dumbledore just loves candy so much. It's like there's literally no downside to candy.
That's true.
Yeah,
it makes me happy.
Yeah, it's like stomach aches, magically solved. You think we can't figure out sugar? Come on,
not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
Okay, all right, we'll go with that. That's fun. Like a good plan. So yeah. Wizards eat way more candy wizards than we thought.
What's interesting to me about this passageway too is that it is also like, despite it seeming like it has to be a shortcut, it's not.
It's not.
It is not a shortcut to Hogsmeade.
Not at all. Yeah, it is decidedly a secret passageway that gets you there in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
And specifically roundabout and not direct about.
Right.
So they do successfully make it. Ron's sort of like, what took you so long? And like, you know, he's like, Snape was hanging around. So they go off and do their thing. They immediately go and check out that baller post office.
I know.
Can't miss.
Can't miss. Ron's like, we gotta check out the post office. I'll pretend to send Bill a letter. You look around.
Enjoy yourself.
I know.
See those tiny little Scops owls.
Oh, yeah. We are living it up at the post office.
I did highlight that bit, though, because I was like, the Scops owls are specifically for local deliveries only, which just seems like a good piece of trivia.
Yeah, Scops. You know,
it's like, yeah. What type of owls are specifically only for local deliveries?
Yeah.
Scops owls.
Scops owls.
Now we all know.
Don't
ask me on tour, though, because I will have forgotten.
Scops.
Scops owls.
Scops
hopefully.
Owls.
Let's see here.
Then they go to Zonko's, and Harry gets a bunch of dung bombs and hiccup sweets and frog spawn soap and nose-biting teacups.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. There is a line, though, that says that there were, in Zonko's, there were jokes and tricks to fulfill even Fred and George's wildest dreams, to which I was like, maybe not quite.
Almost.
Almost, because at some point in time, they're debating on buying Zonko's because their shop is that much better.
Exactly. Then they go up to the Shrieking Shack. Where Ron says, even the Hogwarts ghosts avoid it. I said, I asked Neil Handless Nick. He says they heard a very rough crowd lives here. No one could get in. It's just like, it's just not true.
I know.
No one can get in? What do you mean no one can get in? They can float right through the walls, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it would be a big deal.
Are there
like,
enchantments you can put on it to stop ghosts from getting in?
I suppose it's possible. Right. I mean, and maybe that would be something that Dumbledore would have done when Lupin was using it.
Yeah.
But like the fact that it is so described as like the most haunted, place in Britain, it's like there would have been the 7 years in like the 1970s when that was true.
Yeah.
But like it would have been a rather brief stint and only on very specific days.
Right.
You know, it's, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. So it sometimes I'm like, I don't know why this place has such a bad reputation.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't, maybe if something happened for 7 years, you'd be like, yeah, I'm not going to that place, which is fair.
Yeah.
But to otherwise have like, to have a reputation in a magical world as the most haunted dwelling in all of Britain, it's like, that seems surprising.
It does, when there are literally haunted places.
Right. Yeah. And who is the rough crowd that is supposedly living there? I mean, because it's just Lupin.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he says like, the ghosts won't go there. A very rough crowud lives there. It's like, of ghosts?
Right, yeah.
Right, but they don't go there? I don't. What,
the Bloody Baron?
What is haunting it?
Yeah.
If not ghosts?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a strange one.
No one can get in. Fred and George tried, obviously, but all the entrances are sealed shut. Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But because they're not.
Because they're, maybe from the outside, but like the underground one.
The Whomping Willow.
The Whomping Willow entrance, yeah.
That's true. So then we run into Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, who Malfoy is talking about the hearing that like Lucius is going to be going to tell them all about his arm and how he couldn't use it for 3 months, which like when, you know, it says Crabbe and Goyle sniggered. And it's kind of like, these are people who are being kind of like overheard. And it's like amongst the three of them, they know that his arm worked fine.
Yeah, right.
You know,
absolutely
right. So it's like it's so hard for me to imagine being so caught up in your own like arrogance or something that you're like, he needs to go explain how my arm didn't work for 3 months. It's like, obviously it did, of course, and you guys know that, but like,
right.
but they don't know that.
I know. Also, I would have loved to hear the conversation between Malfoy and Crabbe and Goyle that led them up to the Shrieking Shack. Like, they're just hanging around in Hogsmeade. He's like, Crab, go. Do you guys want to go see the Shrinking Shack?
Right.
Yeah. Should we? Should we?
It could be kind of scary.
It could be kind of spooky. What are the odds of this arrangement of people being here? That, like, it's just Harry, Ron, Malfoy, Crab, and Goyle. Like, the entire school is out at Hogsmeade. And this is, like, a tourist thing to go do.
Right.
Like, only ones there.
I'll tell you how, Jay. Because Draco has, like, a magnetization towards one Harry James Potter.
Absolutely. And who he doesn't even know is there.
He doesn't even know is there.
He's just following his instincts.
Yes, he's like, he's here.
He's here. Potter.
I want to hang out.
Yeah.
but I'm not going to make it seem like that. We could be friends. Maybe. One day.
Maybe.
We'll see. Yeah. Anyway, our kids will be friends. Anyway, he does say that hippogriff is as good as dead. It's like this is
why do you care?
I know. It's like, dude, your vengeance against this hippogriff is ridiculous.
I know.
Yeah.
Right? When like you are so obviously the reason it happened.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. It's just like, you know, I don't know why you care if the hippogriff's like that doesn't serve your purpose at all.
I know.
Like whatever, it's just mean, but it's like you forget how mean Malfoy is in the early days.
I know. Yeah, so he goes from being mean about the hippogriff to spotting Ron and basically just being mean to him instead and talking about how Ron is probably house shopping for the Shrieking Shack and it must be so nice to have a room to yourself in the Shrieking Shack.
Yeah, I know. I feel like Roger, but joke's on you. I have my own room. So, yeah.
So, there. Yeah.
But got him.
I know. But Harry thinks quickly, and because he's under the invisibility cloak, he has the perfect opportunity to go and pick up just a heaping pile of mud and splat it right on Malfoy's stupid head.
This is another great example of, like, why didn't you just magically do this instead of use your hands to do this?
I know.
Yeah. This is the first time I feel like Malfoy's hair is described as silver blonde as well.
Oh, true.
You know, which I'm like, that feels like a very like Targaryen kind of description, you know?
A little bit. Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
Dripping in muck.
And I love how Ron comes up with like such a good spin on it. He's like, very haunted up here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just like that's pretty good. That was fast on your feet.
That's exactly. I highlighted that. I said, I literally was like, excellent delivery, Ron.
Excellent delivery.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know this was going to happen.
What a real high moment for this chapter for Ron.
No, and then Harry finds a sloppy puddle yielding some foul-smelling green sludge. And I'm like, what? Why?
As much as I would want to prank somebody, I think it would be like the type of thing where it's like, I have to touch it too.
Exactly. One, you're going to have to touch it too. And it's like, I've never just come across foul-smelling green sludge puddles.
Me neither.
You know?
Yeah, where are these things?
I know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, only near the Shrieking Shack.
Only near the Shrieking Shack.
That's part of its charm.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so then basically, you know, it's like Harry has kind of taken things just like a little bit too far. And now because Crab, Goyle, and Malfoy have kind of grown wise to the situation, they sort of start like moving in big directions, swirling. I don't know. I'm trying to describe how I think that this would have gone down. And Crab ends up having his huge flat foot caught on the hem of Harry's cloak. And for a split second, Malfoy was able to see Harry's floating head.
Mm-hmm.
And at which point, basically, the two of them simultaneously realize what is going to happen.
Yes.
Which is Malfoy is like, I'm going back right now. And Harry's like, I'm going back right now.
Yeah. It is like amazing how quickly Draco does the math. Like, oh my God, Harry Potter's here. He's not supposed to be here. I have to tell someone I'm going to get him expelled. Go.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Like it's
That's what arrives in his brain immediately.
Right.
Yeah. Like such is the common knowledge that Harry Potter's not supposed to be in Hogsmeade.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But this is what tells us that the secret passage is a not so shortcut because Harry, even though he's running as fast as he can, knows that Malfoy would get back to the castle before him.
Yeah.
And so basically he's just going to have to figure out like what to do once he gets there and hopes he can spin it somehow.
But it's one of those things where like obviously Harry is like panicking, so he's not thinking it through. But like he's right. Like, would anyone believe Malfoy? It's like, there's really no reason for them to, you know?
Like, true.
Right. It's like, it's basically just his word against nothing.
Yes.
You know? It's like, and Harry has the map. He has the invisibility cloak. You know? Like, it's so easy to avoid being caught in the scenario.
All the tools should be there.
All the tools should be there. They literally are there. Like, oh, and it's, it gets so much. It's so, like, Harry just drives me crazy in this chapter. Malfoy gets back first, I guess, because, the long path. And then, this is what drives me crazy. He said, he gets back to the stone slide and says, he would have to leave the cloak where it was. It was too much of a giveaway in case Malfoy tipped off a teacher. And I'm like, not if you're under it. How are they going to see it?
Right.
Like,
right.
No, it's not. And it's like, not only does he just make the extremely bad decision to leave the cloak there, but while he's deciding what's going to be incriminating, he doesn't empty his pockets of all the Zonko stuff.
I know.
Like, dude.
Yeah. It's like, especially because it seems like the invisibility cloak sort of has this like unique ability to like fold down very small.
Yes.
Like when he goes into like the Forbidden Forest, you know, to die at the end of Deathly Hallows, it's just sort of like neatly packed into like one of the pockets of his cloaks.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just there with him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It's you're right. Yeah. This is like a very strange one because it's like, yeah, he has taken the time to consider what would be a problem and doesn't consider his pockets that are bursting with nose biting teacups.
I know. And it's like, and then he like leaves the hump and like Snape is rounding the corner and it's like, dude, you have the map. Like, just stay down there until Snape's not there.
Right.
And it's like, even if he discovers it, you've got the cloak.
Right.
Like, he's going to look down there and not see anything. You know? Like, none of it makes sense how you get caught here.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, it's, like, at the worst possible spot to get caught. Like, you emerging from there is bad news. You being seen there is bad news. Like, just, like, put the cloak on. Go back up to the common room. Come out of your dorm. Whoops, I've been here the whole time.
Maybe like, wash your hands, empty your pockets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, there's, it's so easy to avoid getting caught. Like, you can even just make sure you don't run into Snape, you know?
Yes.
Right? Like, wherever he's going, don't go there.
Be somewhere else. Yeah.
Then you can't get caught.
Going for a castle stroll on the exact opposite side of the castle from you at all times.
Right, and then it's like the next morning, you come down to breakfast, and it's like, Malfoy saw you at Hogsmeade. It's like, what? Okay. What are you talking about? I was here.
I don't have, prove it.
Prove it. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's basically it. You can't.
Right.
And it's like, maybe it's easy to say that now in hindsight when we can just stare at the page and be like, what a bunch of mistakes. And clearly Harry's like panicking. But like you took the time to think like the invisibility cloak's too incriminating. Like you took the time to think about incriminating evidence. But not the Zonko stuff.
Yeah, and you gave up the thing that could easily hide you and didn't get rid of the things that like incriminate you.
Yes. Yeah. Like you totally math this backwards.
Yes, indeed. Sure enough, instead of doing all of those things correctly, he does all of those things wrong. And Snape is basically like, come with me, Potter.
Yeah.
And so he goes down to Snape's office, which is just full of a whole bunch of slimy, horrible things in jars. Which, you know, that's kind of like one of those things where it's like, I wonder if it's all just being skewed by it being Snape in particular, because like for some reason, I imagine if this was like Slughorn's office or like Lupin's office, it would just be like interesting things in jars.
Yeah. Right. You
know, instead of
gross things in jars.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Totally like that. And then so Snape tells him the story, says Mr. Malfoy states he was standing talking to Weasley when a large amount of mud hit him in the back of the head. How do you think that could have happened? like magic, dude. We're at magic school. We're at magic school.
People
what are you
do
talking
this all
about?
The time. It's like our version of a spitball.
Exactly. It's like it's not really that weird. I think even in book one, there is a line where Fred and George bewitch snowballs to hit Quirrell in the back of the head.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, what do you mean how could that have happened? I don't know. I wasn't there. What are you talking about?
Mud balls.
Yeah. Magic.
Magic. Easy.
Cast a spell. Who's to say? Yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, Harry describes it as trying to stare down a hippogriff, which at this point in time, I think this is when Snape is just using legilimency.
Oh, it says Snape's eyes were boring into Harry's, and it's like, that's exactly what he's doing.
Yes, 100%. So yeah. Snape just knows that he is.
That's the thing. This is like Snape's problem is that like it's clearly not okay to have read his mind, and even though he has evidence, it's like he doesn't have evidence.
True. Yeah. But I love this line. It says, "Your head is not allowed in Hogsmeade. No part of your body has permission to be in Hogsmeade." And I was just like, Yeah, good clarification, yes, Sev.
Right, right.
Yeah. Head or body, neither of them is allowed.
Yes. I love what he says, like, if your head was in Hogsmeade, so was the rest of you. And I'm like, well, not necessarily, like flu powder. People could be in two places at once a little bit.
Right.
You're about to use flu powder.
It's true. It's true.
You're about to just yell through flu powder. Like, you know.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So Harry's basically just holding up as he does. Snape was trying to provoke him into telling you the truth, which he wasn't going to do. Snape had no proof yet.
Yeah. Lovely says Malfoy is not having hallucinations. And I'm like, oh yeah, just 3-month-long scratch related injuries. You know, like, yes, Malfoy's honor is not exactly in a great place at the moment.
Not,
you know,
in good standing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Snape, I know, you know, he's faking.
Right. Right. Yeah. But this is where Snape really, I think, like, he's been in the right pretty much the whole time. Like, you know,
that's
He's pretty much caught Harry mud-handed, as it were. And now I think he does cross the line into just sheer unprofessionalism as a teacher talking to a student, where he basically just says, how extraordinarily like your father you are. He too was exceedingly arrogant. A small amount of talent on the Quidditch field made him think he was a cut above the rest of us too. Strutting around the place with his friends and admirers, the resemblance between you is uncanny.
The absolute hypocrisy of this statement too, because Snape is being so exceedingly arrogant himself in this moment.
Yes, you know? Yes, absolutely. And it's just kind of like, I don't know, it's like he really is baiting Harry in a way that is like, it's like he's broken the rules of war or whatever. It's like, no, you've gone too far.
Right.
You've gone too far.
Yeah.
But he does, in fact, make Harry extremely mad, which I think is sort of laying what is otherwise kind of good groundwork for the you know, rivalry between Harry and James and his friends, aka the other Marauders, and Snape himself.
Yep.
Harry does tell him to shut up.
Yep.
To which, you know, that's another one of those where it's like, oh gosh, well, Harry, that's not going to help your case either. What did you say to me, Potter? I told you to shut up about my dad.
Yeah. Doubles down.
Doubles down.
Doubles down. I love this. Snape's sallow skin had gone the color of sour milk.
Ooh, yum. Much
usually the skin tone I already sort of prescribed to Snape. So
his bald head.
His bald head and his sour milk skin.
Yikes.
Gross.
Greasy
hair. Vulture-like neck.
It is hard to imagine Snape in a positive light with these descriptors, isn't it? Let's see here.
So then Snape reveals that, like, even though, yes, James did save my life, it's only because he endangered it in the first place.
Yes.
And I guess the trick here is that they were going to, or Sirius had told Snape that if you pressed the knot on the Whomping Willow, it would freeze the tree and there was a passage and you could go down it. And Snape was listening to him and he was going to do that. But what he was ultimately going to find at the end of the passage was a transformed Lupin.
Yeah.
And that's what was probably going to have killed him. And then James is like, no, well, we can't do that. We can't do that.
Yeah, serious, my man. You know, like we're pals and all, but no, we're not going to kill Severus Snape.
Yeah, and we're not going to make Lupin a murderer.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, in that regard, it's like, I mean, you can see both reasons so crystal clear because I can't imagine a world where James would be willing to put that on Lupin's conscience for the rest of his life.
Absolutely.
Like, you
know, yeah.
It's, I mean, both situations would be bad. I mean, you'd be like playing a terrible and dangerous thing and also making somebody, one of your best friends, probably hate you for the rest of your
life.
Yeah, because Lupin's not going to be happy about that.
No, he would not. Yeah, to be used that way.
Yeah, but so anyway, this is the point where Snape is able to force Harry to pull out all, or to turn out his pockets, which are just bulging with Zonko's tricks and the Marauder's map, to which
Harry...
Yeah, Harry, thinking quick on his feet is Ron brought these back, brought them back from Hogsmeade last time, and Snape is rather quick, and he's like, indeed, and you've been carrying them around ever since.
Yeah,
how very touching.
Yes,
it's like they're my emotional support jokes.
is like, so he's just so on to him. And he's like, he's so correct about everything, you know? And then Snape picks up the map, pulls the oldest trick in the book, says, oh, I guess I'll just throw it in the fire. And Harry's like, no! And then he's like, well, 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 clearly this is important to you. What is it? Nothing.
Nothing. It's nothing at all.
Nothing at all. Instructions to get into Hogsmeade without passing the Dementors. Literally.
Literally, yes. He also says, is this another treasured gift from Mr. Weasley? And I was like, LOL.
I mean,
like,
yes.
Like Messers Weasley. Fred and George.
Yeah.
But then now we get the unique kind of magic, which is Snape screaming at the map to reveal your secret. Show yourself. Professor Snape, master of this school, bold claim, commands you to yield the information you conceal.
Yeah. It's like very odd way to do magic. It's like this is like it's like the turn Scabbers yellow spell.
Exactly.
You know? It's just like turn yellow, rat.
You know? This stupid fat map yellow.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And it's weird to me because he's clearly suspicious of the statue earlier that these are the things he doesn't try on the statue.
Exactly.
You know, like, because it feels like it would have worked because he thinks it's going to work.
Yeah, he does.
You know, he's
does.
Not just sort of being like, ah, tell me what to do. You know?
Right, right. Yeah. Snape, all of his other faults aside, is a good wizard.
Yes, he is very good wizard, which is why I can't believe he doesn't figure out the statue.
I know.
Yeah. But now he's really done it because he has activated the map against him.
He has indeed.
And like, okay, this is one of the funniest things that happens in the whole book because one, I don't know if the map would react this way to literally anybody or because of the specific relationship the Marauders had with Snape, if it is literally a defense specifically there for Snape.
I know. It's a tricky one. And the thing that makes me wonder is that they do in map form refer to Snape as Professor Snape and not like Snivellus or Severus Snape. Yeah. Like
they do return the name that Snape offered.
Yes. Which like, and on some level it kind of feels like a standard defense mechanism that would maybe like that would maybe detour you from ever discovering the true contents because you might just think that it's a piece of parchment that's designed to like insult its master, which is exactly what Lupin says.
But then there also seems to be like personal jabs mixed in with the Professor Snape-ness of it.
True.
Like they do mention he should wash his hair and it said his astonishment that an idiot like that ever became a professor. That sounds like Mr. Padfoot knew him ahead of time.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, is this, or does this, or does the map have like an ability to like get a brief history from the person talking to it or something?
I don't know. Yeah. Or is it kind of similar to like the portraits where it's like been taught certain things?
Right. It kind of feels like that. Like it would insult anybody, but the fact that it's Snape gives it a little bit more oomph behind its insults.
Maybe so.
But like I can only imagine though, like it's so funny when you're reading it that this is happening to Snape. But like for Snape, this must be like genuinely traumatic to be like bullied from beyond the grave.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just like, are you kidding me right now?
No. Not these guys again.
Yeah. But like, which, do you think he knows it's them?
I think he knows it's them.
Yeah.
I do think that he knows their identities.
Yeah.
Because he like the way that he responds to it, he immediately calls Lupin.
Yeah.
You know, and right. he would know Lupin's affliction and maybe he can decode Mooney.
Maybe. Yeah.
But I don't totally know.
Because he mentions like you don't think it more likely he got it straight from the manufacturers.
Yes, exactly. You
know, like he says that, which is like very like you know why. But I guess at this point he doesn't know it's a map either. Like maybe he knows that like okay, this is a piece of parchment made by you four idiots and.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. Look, I mean, maybe, yeah, the getting to the conclusion that it's the Marauder's map feels more unlikely. The idea that Harry would have something that had formerly been owned by his father, by his father's code name, you know, along with his comrades.
Yeah.
Like, and then associating like the particular kind of like insults that these guys may have delivered at him. Like it could be linkaging enough of the details together.
It also, it strikes me that like whilst their nicknames are like for each other. They do just openly call each other by these nicknames in front of the other students.
They do.
You know, oh, you know what? Because even in Snape's worst memory, like they're referring to each other as like Padfoot and stuff. So it's like he probably does know exactly who they are.
He does know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
He just doesn't know it's a map.
He doesn't know.
He just thinks it's a parchment that insults you.
Yep, you're 100% right. So he definitely knows that
yeah,
it's them.
You're right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So that's kind of interesting then, because this means that Lupin and Snape are actually having, like, I wouldn't call it a tactful conversation.
It's a very veiled conversation.
It's a veiled conversation. Yeah. Like, they both know that each other knows more. Like, even Lupin's claim, like, I imagine Harry got it from a joke shop. It's like, Snape is like, you and I both know that's not true.
Yeah, like, we both know you made that.
Yes, 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 yes.
And Lupin's like, but I know you can't prove it.
I know you can't prove it. And also, are you going to say that in front of Harry?
Exactly. Like, yeah.
So this is actually, when you imagine it like that, Lupin is probably quietly enjoying himself.
Oh, Lupin is loving. Can you imagine? I mean, Lupin is walking through this fireplace and he is like taking in the situation. I love the sentence. Like, Harry had the impression Lupin was doing some very quick thinking. It's like, I can't even imagine. Because like, certainly Lupin probably doesn't approve of like the bullying of Snape and stuff. But he also kind of like later, like even when he's talking to Harry later, he's like, Snape was kind of a special case. Like, they were just always at it with each other. And you can just see him like recognize the map, which he hasn't seen in years.
Right.
Probably doesn't even think it exists anymore. And he's like, hey, the map. And then he looks at Snape and he reads it and he's like, no way. No way, no way, no way.
It worked.
It worked. I can't believe I'm here to see it.
That's exactly it. Yes. Like, but like, you know, best case scenario is it gets to do its job at any point ever.
I know.
Even better case scenario is you witness it.
I know. It. Like, this is, whoo. Yes. High five to past self. Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Oh, so good. What did my guy write?
You know? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good. I like it. I like it. Yep. So,
oh my gosh, I know, this is such a fun scene for Lupin. This is another one of the scenes where like Lupin is just one of my favorite characters, because he just takes in the whole situation immediately.
Yep. So then after all this is basically going down, Ron crashes through the door. Why it took him so long to get back when he had the same short pathway as Malfoy?
I know. Shouldn't Ron have beaten Harry back?
Or possibly. I mean, it's like, this is a real foot race between the two. It means,
right.
It means canonically Draco is a faster runner than Ron.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's true.
But maybe Ron's faster than Crabbe and Goyle.
They're still back there.
We have no evidence that they've made it back yet.
Yeah.
They gave up. Let's see here. So then Lupin is basically just like, well, if all things are settled, then let's go ahead. I'm going to take this map back.
I love that scene in the movie, especially when he's like, just a spat bit of parchment. And like Snape reaches for it and he's like, nonetheless.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's like, no, 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 no. No, I am keeping this.
Yeah.
This is literally mine.
I made it. Let's see here. Yeah, so then he says, Harry, Ron, come with me. I need a word about my vampire essay, which comes up again. Excuse us, Severus. I mean, vampire. I wrote in that part.
Lupin's, like, polite, like, completely veiled, tactful messing with Snape is my favorite thing.
Dude, if anything, you know what's really interesting about this is that Lupin, this whole scene, is total Dumbledore. Like, he's very politely, like, sidestepping and weaving the conversation while maintaining, like, total civility.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, at no point is he, like, becoming... like argumentative or loud or emotional. Like,
yeah.
It kind of reminds me of the scene like where Dumbledore arrives at the Ministry of Magic and they're like, oh, you got our owl that the time and date had changed. And he's like, oh, by happy accident, I arrived 3 hours early. It's like, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Now I'm like, here.
Great. Fingers crossed. Pursued.
Yep.
I love this line too, where he says like he says, you got it directly from the manufacturers. Meaning, so he's having the conversation with Lupin. You don't think, I guess he's probably trying to say that like, you don't think Harry got it from Sirius Black or something. I don't know.
I think my read is that he got it from Lupin.
From Lupin. Okay. Okay.
Maybe. Yeah.
So he's basically saying, you don't think it's likely that he got it from one of you.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, Lupin like understands Snape can't reveal any of the information. He looks at it and he's like, what do you mean, Mr. Wormtail? Harry, do you know any of these men? And it's like, when he says, what do you mean these people, Mr. Wormtail? And it's like Snape knows, Lupin knows.
Yes. Yeah.
That like he knows exactly who it is.
Right. Right.
But he can't reveal it. It's like Lupin's just like so politely just like, I've got you in a corner.
Right. Right. And I do. Yeah. I love the fact that like even of like, well, I don't even know if like it would be the case that Wormtail would be the person he would least likely to know, but he's standing in the room with Mr. Mooney. Mr. Padfoot is actively hunting for him, and Mr. Prongs is his dad.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting that like in this moment too, when he reaches for Mr. Wormtail, that Lupin reaches for Peter here, because I guess in his brain at this moment, Sirius is the guilty one and Peter is just like the victim.
True.
You know?
True. Yeah.
So like, he might be like trying to choose like the more innocent one.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. Okay. Okay.
And I love like this is sort of a funny question where Harry like accidentally lies, where he says, Harry, do you know any of these men? And Harry says, no, despite talking to one of them.
Yes. So good. So good.
Yeah.
Lupin does say that he happens to know that the map was confiscated by Mr. Filch many years ago. Yes, I know it's a map.
Yes.
And he does sort of say that, like, I'm surprised that you didn't take the more responsible route, particularly like what happened after the last time the student left information lying about the castle, which is, you know, a reference to Neville leaving the password lying around. And then this is where Harry sort of dials in on a little bit of what was going on and says, why did Snape think I got it from the manufacturers?
Yeah.
And this is where Lupin's like, oh, boy. I was happy doing this to Snape. I don't really want to lie to
you. I know. But then he's pretty honest about it. He says, because these map makers would have wanted to lure you out of the school, they'd think it extremely entertaining. And it's sort of like, that's interesting. Like, what their, like, maybe intended purpose of the map was for, like, future generations. Like, yeah, get people out of school. This would be hilarious.
Yeah. I guess it's an interesting point to say, like, lure somebody out of school, because that is sort of the story of what they do to Snape.
Yeah.
Is luring somebody out of school.
Yeah.
And because they think it's entertaining.
Yeah.
Although I guess in that situation, Lupin can't possibly have, agreed to that particular prank.
Yeah. And then back when they mentioned that, so I think earlier in this book, we were like wondering, when Fred and George got the map from Filch, whether or not, like, how on earth Filch ever could have confiscated it from the Marauders, or whether or not maybe the Marauders just planted it in Filch's office. Clearly, this is confirmation that Filch did confiscate it, but I think I still am under the theory that they planned for him to confiscate it.
I agree. Because I suspect that what you end up with is the four of them as seventh years kind of looking at the map and being like, well, it will be no use to us anymore once we've left. We should probably leave it.
Right.
You know, for future rule breakers to discover.
Right.
And of course, the only people that you could argue follow in their shadow to their caliber are Fred and George, who are the ones who find it.
Who are the ones who find it,
so
yes.
It's kind of perfect.
It works out. And then it's so funny that it ends up with Harry anyway.
Right. Yes.
Yes. And then Lupin has a little sideways lie here. And Harry's like, do you know them? And he's like, we've met.
That's one that I wrote like a little thing here. It reminds me of Lupin's like OWL answers on identifying werewolves.
Yeah.
Where it's like, he's sitting in my chair. He's writing with my pencil. Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, he's me.
Yeah.
It's like, we met.
Yeah. I know them.
Mm-hmm. They're me.
Yeah. Like, but he does not. Then he immediately like shifts it so that Harry cannot ask any follow-up questions. Like, don't expect me to cover for you again, Harry.
That was a good Lupin impression.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Working on, if you guys are looking for casting or whatever.
Yeah, of course, of course. This is the moment, though, where we kind of brought it up earlier, but Lupin sort of does, he does sort of go brass tacks with him, because it's important to keep in mind that at this point in the story, Lupin doesn't know the truth that what happened with Peter and Sirius. And I do think that, like, all kidding aside, everything, even if there was like an ounce of like reminiscence or like, you know, hey, let's like, you know, be kind of like playful at Snape's, you know, expense.
Right.
This is the moment, I think, where like Lupin is just sort of like, you gotta be careful, man. Like your parents did sacrifice themselves, and it's not good to be risking your life.
Yeah.
You know,
for your biting teacup. Is that worth it? Was it worth it?
Was it worth it? I don't think so.
I don't think it was worth it.
Right. Who are you going to use it on, Neville?
Yeah. Right. And they're like, what is it? But it's like, it's not fun. You don't use it on yourself. Right.
Like, yeah, it has to be like one of the, like the shock pens.
Yes.
Where it's like, hey, can I borrow a pen? It's like, yeah, sure thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Nailed it. Then let's see. They leave and Ron says, it's my fault. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. It is your fault.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that though, because this is another one where we were just writing some of the what if Ron was in Hufflepuff this past week, and it was it goes back a full book, but it's through the Whomping Willow where like Ron claims ownership over that plan. But I do like the fact that there is at least a scene, a canonical scene, where like Ron does take the lion's share of the blame.
Mm-hmm.
Ha! Yeah, I said lion's share, but in the video we say the badger share.
The badger share of the blame. Yeah, because he's a Hufflepuff in the video. Yeah.
Yep. There we go. But now they're Gryffindor, so lions.
Exactly.
Yeah, it works. Anyway, so then basically what we have is the boys running into Hermione to where Ron is just like, despite all of everything that Hagrid correctly pointed out, Ron has just learned so nothing.
Oh, I mean, yeah, despite everything Hagrid pointed out about the friendship with Hermione, despite her being 1,000,000% correct about not going into Hogsmeade.
And it having gone wrong,
Ron admitting it was his fault, he still can't bring himself to say a single nice thing to Hermione.
Yep, come to have a good gloat, said Ron savagely. Yeah. And this is the point where Hermione is holding a letter from Hagrid in her hands, and it says, I just thought you ought to know, Hagrid lost his case. Buckbeak is going to be executed.
No, with the wings!
Darned it. It would be more sad if we didn't know that Buckbeak ends up being okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like, you know what? They come up with this, like, the world's worst nickname afterwards. Like, we'll call him Witherwings. That way they won't know. I'm like, maybe just start with that. Like, they show up and they're like, all right, where's this hippogriff? Buckbeak. And you're like, I don't know. This is Witherwings.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
This is his best friend, Witherwings.
Best friend.
Yes.
He's done run off. Right. You know, as you said, he was unruly and unmanageable, and sure enough, you were correct. He's gone now.
Meanwhile, I took this guy all the way down here from Hogwarts on a bus.
On a bus. Yeah.
Slept in the bed right next to me.
Right next to me.
Peaceful as can be. He's going
to Madame Marsh didn't mind at all.
Yeah, that the perennial
night bus rider. Yeah.
I love it. Well, there we go. That closes out a beautiful chapter 14, which I you know, it's never fun to have a chapter where we have to be so hard on Ron and Harry, but it is just a little bit of like a dip for them, but not to worry. They'll pull themselves up by their old bootstraps.
They sure will.
We'll see good things yet to come in chapter 15 and beyond.
Yeah. All right. Well, we do have a review, Ben.
Yes, lay it on me.
From the Nerd Doctor. Hey, brother. I've really been enjoying this podcast these past few months. I love listening to it when I'm in the car, cooking, doing chores, or just chilling at work during nap time. I'm a preschool teacher. I was like, wait, you have nap time at work? Should we be doing that?
Yes.
Probably. But my question for you is, do you think Universal will retheme its Harry Potter park/merch for the new show? New candy designs, new robe, wand designs, new pictures of the actors who will play the characters. We all love and know. What do you think, and what would you want them to change? I'll tell you what they should change, Ben, is the candy.
The candy is something that I think that if you've ever been into Honey Dukes before, the aesthetic and the layout and everything is absolutely beautiful. I just wish the candy was better. Like, I would pay more money for smaller amounts of candy that had some type of like imaginative integration into it.
Yeah.
Like I think when we were doing like our taste test video once upon a time, we ended up liking, I think it was like maybe like the pepper imps or something, because they were actually like spicy, and it was kind of like,
I think it was the Choco chocolate or
maybe
something.
That's what it was. And that was that crackly.
I think it had like Pop Rocks in the chocolate or something. And there was another one that was there. It was like really spicy chocolate too.
That's all the bar I'm talking about here. Like, it doesn't need to be like, you know, invent wizard chocolate, because like obviously that's not like really a thing. But like, I think integrating the whimsy so that like everything you eat has sort of like an experience attached to it, because like to me, that is like what the
Wizard of Candy is like. Every piece of candy needs to have whimsy to it.
Yes,
and it's like shaped chocolate is not whimsy,
right?
Like you know, like the chocolate frog, like it needs to be good and tasty and fun to eat.
Yeah,
as well as collect. And it's like the Birdie Bots Every Flavored Beans. That's a great one as is, because it's like. Yes, Jelly Bellies, like, just basically already do this.
Right.
And they can make them taste funny, and they're already whimsical. Things like, there are some things I think, like, you know, like, I don't know, like, rock candy, whatever. Like, it's not very magical or anything, but at least, like, looks whimsical.
It does.
And fun.
Yep.
And, like, it feels like, when I'm in there, it's like, I want to feel like I'm buying something that isn't just like rebranded Muggle candy.
Yeah.
You know,
and, you know, there is a, I wish I could remember the name of it. I know that there's like a Canadian sweet shop, and I'm sure it's not the only one in the world, but they do make these like amazing, like, you know, short form content videos. And basically what they're doing is they have this like really hot piece of granite and they're making like little individual like hard candies.
Yeah.
But they do it like, you know, like with this like really cool, it's almost like going to like one of those like hibachi style
dining
experiences, but you get to like watch the candy be made and they can like weave together different colors to get different outcomes, different flavors, stuff like that. And I feel like having somebody, you know, on staff who is doing that, like you're not creating a magical creation, but that experience and being able to like watch the people like work and do it, to me, I do think that like gives you something.
It feels magical, like when you're watching it, or like if you've ever seen like the taffy machines,
yes,
that are like pulling the taffy, like it's very fun looking. It's like, yeah, I hope they update the candy. I don't think they will update the like wands or the sets or like the actor images or anything. It's because like the Universal worlds are specifically like they are based on the Harry Potter movies.
Yes.
So like I think they will stick with that. It'll be like, these are based on the movies. There is a show, but that's not what this is based on.
Right, right. Yeah. So from a practicality standpoint, I suspect that they will carry all new merch in the stores that does depict stuff from whatever the TV shows end up being.
Yeah.
So like I imagine if they have like new depictions, new creatures, new animals, like whatever, anything like that. Like I suspect you will be able to buy the new show's depictions in those shops with ease. But then like, I think like when you go to like Marvel, like the Marvel campus at Universal, like it's still showing you like more like the comic book versions of everything. And like, despite the fact like the entire, you know, MCU, which of course is owned by Disney, anyway, it's not like they're going to depict the MCU, but
it's like what Marvel or what Universal has the rights to is the comic book version of those characters.
Right.
So like, that's what they have to put up.
Yes.
So it's like, and that's what Universal has the rights to here is like the movie rights, even though it'll be the same people making it. That is what the world is based on. So you're right. I bet they update the merch for stuff like that. I'd be curious. This is like one of those worlds where it's like, you know, when they make the TV show, will they give everyone like a brand new wand, or will they just sort of be like, no, this is Harry's wand, because it's being made by the same like overall company.
Yeah. These are the challenges. I think that it's like, it's the grand curiosity that I myself just as a consumer of the fandom, you know, is like most eager to see what decisions are made. Is like, do you go into like a whole fresh, brand new like landscape for everything? Do you change certain depictions in a way that is like, you know, fresh and exciting, or are we just using like modern day technology with like similar set pieces to sort of like do things in a way that like wasn't possible in the early 2000s when the prior films were being made?
Right.
So there are a lot of questions. I do feel like there are some wizarding properties that have just recently been like, you know, like doors closed on. Like I think there's like a wizarding app.
There was like a trading card game. That they did. It was like sort of like you had to like run around and use your deck and fight creatures and stuff like that. But they just sort of like shut the door on that pretty suddenly.
Right.
And it feels like someone new has taken, I don't know, is that true? Has someone new like taken the helm on this?
I don't know at this moment, yeah. But my thinking is that if there are decisions being made, because I think they're also in the process of creating new lands at Universal to expand like the Ministry of Magic and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, yeah.
And you have to keep in the back of your mind. I mean, in my mind, what they're going to do is the Ministry from the movies and that, yeah. Like the golden statue and like all that type of stuff.
What's playing out, it's supposed to be like you're visiting the Ministry just after Harry's defeated Voldemort and like Umbridge is on trial.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Like sort of the premise of the story. And I think there's also like, you'll also be able to go to like the French Ministry from the Fantastic Beasts movies.
Okay.
Which is sort of surprising that they would incorporate that in there since they're not really making more Fantastic Beasts movies.
True.
Or it doesn't seem like it. But it does seem like someone has come in recently and been like, we're building another Harry Potter park. We're doing a new Harry Potter show. We're nixing this thing that isn't working. Where they just released Quidditch, the Quidditch video game.
Right.
On the heels of that, they announced Hogwarts Legacy 2.
Right.
Like, there are, like, someone somewhere was like, we're not doing enough. Here's what we're going to do. Here's my plan. This. Go.
Yes. I think that levers are being pulled in a big way behind closed doors. And what we're seeing is sort of like the like ripple effects that are sort of permeating out from whatever that like decision room is coming to. And my so without any real hard evidence to go off of, I feel like that is what we're going to be seeing. So it's like, don't over or underreact to sort of anything as the news unfolds over the next like couple of years, because I think everything is going to be part of like a central vision that I suspect is going to be like tying all the bits together in a way that is probably an attempt to build a bridge from what we have known as the visual depictions of this story to what the new version of it will ultimately look like.
Yeah.
I'm deadly curious. I really want to know, what they end up doing with the story, if they do end up making any like major changes. I know this is like a little bit of a deviation, but you and I were just talking about this last night. There is the original story of David Copperfield, which is not the magician. It's like a character that was written by
Charles Dickens.
Look at us go. Knowing literature.
Yeah, on our book podcast.
No, but the point I'm trying to make is that there's a book that just came out in the past couple of years called Demon Copperhead, which is like the story of David Copperfield reimagined into like the early 2000s, like Appalachia. And so that's like where, just for reference, we live where in we the live. World. And so like, you know, inside of that story, there are like, you know, Pokemon cards at one point in time.
Right.
You know, like there's like superheroes and all sorts of stuff. So it's like a completely like reimagined lens for what is otherwise like a rather old story. But like a lot of the same like characters have like woven their way into this new one, and they are still behaving the way that you know those characters to behave. And so there's a piece of me that like can see a world where you take the Harry Potter formula, and even if you like extract it from like the 90s when it's supposed to take place and put it some other time entirely, like I think that there's a world where that can still work exceedingly well.
Yeah, I mean, I think some stuff like that eventually, I don't think that's what the next series is going to be.
I don't know if that'll be the next one.
I think what they're doing is just like a you know, page to screen adaptation.
Yes, yes.
As tight as possible.
Which is arguably what the fans have been clamoring for years and years and years.
It's like one of those things where it's like, you know, if like forever I've been wanting that to happen. And then when they announce it, all these people come out of the woodwork like, why are you doing that? And it's like, because everyone wanted it.
It's the classic case where just, you know, you're not going to get universal acceptance. I think Dumbledore says that to Hagrid at one point in time. He's like, if you're holding out for universal support, you're going to be here forever. Yeah. So it's like at some point, you know, you're just going to have to, you know,
right.
Like believe that whatever's coming is coming. But, I'm excited for what does come next. And I suspect that here on the podcast, we will be doing like episode recaps and breakdowns.
Absolutely. We will be for sure.
So looking forward to what's to come. I suspect that the investment placed into Universal, to answer the question more succinctly, I suspect that, you know, the dragon on top of Gringotts and all those set pieces that they've built are just too expensive, too extravagant, too large, and too iconic, to be honest, to alter. I don't see a world where that happens, at least not immediately, and not until probably the series has done the unknowable task of potentially usurping the movies in terms of how people visualize the saga.
Yeah, I think Universal will remain, at least the attractions will remain based on the movies, and probably the merch will be updated because, of course, they're going to want to sell as much stuff as possible.
And what better place?
Yeah,
absolutely.
You're already there. So.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's our answer. But I think that brings us to our close.
That does. That brings us to our close. As ever, there will be an extra question answered over on the Owlry on the Patreon if you want to go check that out. And if you have not signed up for a signed page from one of Ben and I's books, that is going out to anyone who signs up for an annual membership on our Patreon.
Yes,
we have started mailing them out. People have sent me pictures of the ones they got, and I'm always like, oh, which one did you get? Did you get me or Ben? Or
I know. Yes. Yeah. It is so exciting. Like, I think that's going to be like its own like victory in and of itself is like not just you getting it, but then us knowing what you got.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
It's like trading cards almost, where it's like, I want to know.
I know. Yeah. You guess, like, I feel like, you know, people could get together and they could try and reassemble the whole book. You know,
can you
that'd
imagine?
Be wild.
That would be so wild.
That'd be wild. It'd be so coordinated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, probably not going to happen. Anyway, though, thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you join us next week for Chapter 15, the Quidditch Final on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Through the Gryffindor is back, and this time we are heading to the West Coast. Join Jay and I as we record brand new episodes of the show live in person with you guys, plus a special in-person Jay versus Ben with questions asked by... This September, we will be heading to Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, Berkeley, San Diego, and Los Angeles. Seattle and San Diego were both sold out, but we've just added matinee shows to both locations. So if you missed out on the first pass, or if you want to join us for a doubleheader, we will have two unique shows in the same day. For us, there is nothing more fun than getting to nerd out Harry Potter style with each and every one of you. And we will also have exclusive Through the Gryffindor merch and a VIP meet and greet available for every show. We hope to see you all there. Ticket links can be found in the show notes or at supercarlinbrothers.com.